Here and Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service and PRI.
I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now. French journalist Edith Bouvier, injured in Homs, Syria, is still asking her government to rescue her.
I suffered a broken leg from the femur upwards and horizontally too. I need an urgent operation. The doctors here have done their best to treat us, but they can't perform a surgical operation.
Bouvier was wounded in the same attack that killed foreign correspondent Marie Colvin and French photographer Rémy Oclic Wednesday. You just heard her in a video, but contact with people like Edith Bouvier is difficult because the internet is down, satellite phones are not working. Activists tell us the government is blocking text messages containing words like revolution. Still, thousands of Syrians have taken to the streets in Homs singing and chanting anti-government protests, perhaps buoyed by a conference being called the Friends of Syria in Tunis. It's demanding an immediate ceasefire so humanitarian aid can be delivered to cities like Homs. The BBC's diplomatic correspondent Jonathan Marcus is in Tunis. Jonathan, I'm imagining there's a sense of urgency there.
Well, there's a huge sense of urgency, but also a growing sense of frustration as well, I think. Talking to the British Foreign Secretary, William Hague, when he left the meeting, he admitted that all of the things discussed here are not going to change anything on the ground in Syria immediately. He said that was immensely frustrating, but he did believe that what had been discussed would tighten the stranglehold, as he called it, on the Syrian regime. He also said that there had been steps taken to increase the status of the main Syrian opposition group, the Syrian National Council, that now is seen by this meeting as a legitimate representative of the Syrian people, not the single representative. It's not viewed yet as a kind of government in waiting, but its stature has been boosted. It's committed to trying to broaden its base, to make commitments about the safety of minorities in a future democratic Syria and so on. So I think we're going to see much stronger and higher level contacts with the Syrian opposition over the coming days and weeks.
Well, as we were hearing yesterday on the program, that this is one of the problems, that there's not just one opposition group and that there's all sorts of subtext to the fighting. This is, a fight for more democratic leadership, but also a battle between Sunnis and Shia. Meanwhile, we know that Russia and China are against any kind of intervention, and of course, Iran behind the scenes the same. So what's the sense that, we were hearing yesterday that there would be this 72-hour ultimatum that countries, the U.S., European, Arab leaders would deliver to Syrian's president. What's the sense that that can come out of this?
Well, that isn't going to come out of it, and I think in a way that was just erroneous signalling, if you like. You can't have an ultimatum if there isn't an or else. There's been discussion about peacekeeping forces, an Arab peace force, for example, but of course that would have to go in after a ceasefire where there was an established peace to actually keep. Nobody is talking about fighting their way into Syrian cities. Now, something that's perhaps of more relevance is the issue of arming the Syrian opposition, and clearly the Syrian National Council and other Syrian groups have called for arms to be given to them so that they can defend themselves better. There is a growing understanding, if you like, that if the fighting continues and if the Syrian authorities don't have a change of heart, then we are almost inevitably going to see countries giving arms to the Syrian opposition. I asked the British Foreign Secretary if Britain would back that. He said the standard line, that there's a European Union arms embargo on Syria. But of course, if you think back, there was an arms embargo against Libya, and that didn't stop countries like Qatar and France and so on actually providing arms to the Libyan rebels. I think if the fighting continues, we may very quickly see that kind of situation developing in Syria.
And Jonathan, just briefly, what about humanitarian aid? We were hearing yesterday about some countries wanting a cordon to be cleared so that aid could go in, but that, of course, requires the military. The thinking was that wouldn't happen. The International Red Cross is calling for simply a break in the fighting for a couple of hours so that they can go in and at least get people like this wounded journalist and other Syrians who are wounded and treat them. Is that on the table?
The trouble is, call them what you will, safe havens or humanitarian corridors or whatever, the idea of forcing these upon a sovereign Syrian government implies a considerable use of force. And as I say, that goes back to the whole military argument, and that at the moment isn't going to happen. So any discussion of humanitarian access depends depends upon the Syrian authorities actually granting that access.
The BBC's diplomatic correspondent in Tunis, Jonathan Marcus, thanks so much.
Thank you.